Jellyheads, and welcome to another episode of Last Coin at the Arcade. We're your hosts, Lucas Wilson and
Kevin Wixwatt,
and we're going to talk about Broken Age, Act 1. But before we get into it, I just want to say hello, Kevin. Welcome officially.
Officially? What, the first two times were unofficial?
You were guest host.
Okay.
But you are now?
I'm a real host.
A real host. Yes.
Oh, man. I've been dreaming of this my whole life.
Now, yep. Kay had to leave for personal reasons, so now Kevin is taking her place, which I'm very glad. I really enjoyed the past two episodes on.
Yep.
You were very, very fun to listen to.
Yep. I'm joining the show for personal reasons.
So, this game, Kevin, is something... You got a copy of this because you were a Kickstarter backer.
Yep. Two years ago.
This is one of the first, like, really multi-million dollar Kickstarter campaigns.
Yeah, it really just started out with an idea, and finally it's here. Tim Schafer, who I've always been a fan of, is kind of off of normal games. Like, they're just not standard. Mm-hmm. So I've always enjoyed playing his games, and so I was pretty excited when it first got the opportunity to actually put money towards it.
Do you want to say let the audience know what other games he's made so that maybe they might be familiar?
He started out at LucasArts. From there, he moved on and started making his own games. Actually, LucasArts, he made Grim Fandango, Monkey Island. Grim Fandango was later, but those are the two that I enjoyed the most. He's done, what's the one with Jack Black? Not heavy metal. That's what it was inspired by. I can't remember the title of it at the moment. Yeah, I really enjoyed that one as well. It's basically just a rock game. But every game he does, it's not something that I've played before. And whenever I play games, I look for something that's new and interesting and is a little bit different. I don't like getting the same experience over and over. So he's definitely, you know, someone who I follow.
Psychonauts too, right?
Yes. I forgot about Psychonauts. Yeah, I played that one.
That was the last game he made before this. No, the Brutal Legend. I think that's what it's
Brutal
called.
Legend. Yeah,
that was the last one he made. Then Psychonauts was before that.
Yep, Psychonauts, I beat that one, and that was really good. I actually didn't get into that one until much later when everyone was like, oh, man, this one. Basically, he makes games that don't make money, but they're really good games. So, I mean, critically, they tend to do well, but the following is small, and that's how it's always been. So
it's not Call of Duty, so.
Yeah, and that's why I turned to... You know, he made his own studio, Double Fine Productions, and then he decided to give this Kickstarter thing a shot because all his previous games didn't make money, and this kind of made sure that he was going to actually be able to continue doing what he wants to do.
Took a day, played the full first act. The second act won't be here for a while.
Yeah, I think he said before the end of the year.
So it could be any month now.
Well, probably closer to fall. Fourth quarter, I imagine.
Maybe September, October, November time.
Hopefully.
Still quite a way off since we just finished the year.
Yeah. But. Well, at least they have the engine all set up, and I imagine they have a whole bunch of art assets created.
Yeah, I would assume so. Let's get right into this. I'm going to give the audience a little bit of a description.
Sure.
We'll move on to our breakdown. Broken Age is the first graphic adventure game by Tim Schafer in 16 years. Broken Age began with the help of a record-breaking Kickstarter campaign. Broken Age is a timeless coming-of-age story of barfing trees and talking spoons. Vela Tartine and Shay Volta are two teenagers in strangely similar situations but radically different worlds. The player can freely switch between the stories, helping them take control of their own lives and dealing with the unexpected adventures that follow.
Yeah, that's about right. I think that's the right game. That's the one we played.
Yeah, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the same one. Thank you, Metacritic.
I mean, there's lots of games of talking spoons and barfing trees, but I think we have the right one.
So, Kevin, why don't we talk about the gameplay?
Sure. This gameplay, it's a standard point-and-click old school adventure game.
Old school.
Well, not completely. I mean, there's no more action verbs.
You don't need to type in what to do.
And things get highlighted when you want. If you can interact with something, it gets highlighted, which changes the gameplay a lot from older games, but it makes it a lot more user-friendly. I think for the age we're now in games, this is definitely a right step in the direction to make his games more accessible. It's not as daunting to look at a screen and have absolutely no idea where to go to next. I know that's probably going to be one of the biggest complaints of the game, that
the simplicity.
It's too user-friendly. And I know at least when me and you played it, we typically, if we couldn't solve something, we'd go through the systematic process of clicking on everything. And since there's only a few things to click on in a screen that get highlighted, there's only so many things you can do.
Yeah.
So there were a few puzzles where we literally just tried every combination and eventually you'd get it, which is probably the biggest downfall of the game. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of a welcome addition just in that you're not sitting there for hours on end wondering, which I know some people really enjoy that. They like sitting there. They like figuring out a puzzle for hours. This isn't one of those games. It's a little bit more simplistic than that.
Yeah, I remember there was a particular level, like a world that we visited, where we spent probably the most time out of any portion of the game.
Yeah.
Because we just didn't know the order of things, so we had to...
Also, we forgot about one of the mechanics of the game. Like, we didn't know we could do something, then all of a sudden it was like, wait a minute, we can do this. Yeah, I forgot about the old tested and true method of combining items.
Yes.
So it took a while.
Yeah, that was something, because they did that like maybe two other times before in the game.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
You just forgot about it.
Yeah, maybe if it was a little, it happened more often, we would have known better. It happened the first time we played, and then another time in like the other character's storyline, and then it was like,
yeah,
we didn't come across it again until this time.
Yeah,
yeah,
and we actually didn't know that we could switch between characters, because there's two parallel storylines for everyone who hasn't played it, and you can switch between them depending on what you want to do. So I think the way they wanted it to work was when you got stuck on a puzzle, so you could keep playing the game while thinking about that puzzle as you'd switch character lines, which is eventually what we did when we got stuck on a puzzle.
Yeah.
But we didn't realize we could do that because nothing ever told us, oh, hey, click on this to switch.
Yeah, we thought maybe in the beginning, which one do you want to start with? And it was like, oh, well, I guess that means maybe when we're done with one, we go back to the main menu and start the other or something like that. And
I thought it'd be once you hit a certain point with one character, it would automatically switch over to the other one. Which it doesn't do that. I think it's a good mechanic. They just didn't convey it in the beginning early enough, because I think I would have enjoyed that more. I would have done less of trying to combine random things, and I would have done more of thinking. I would have just switched over rather than sitting there being like,
I don't think I've seen a game do that before. They try to create a situation to help you get a break from another puzzle, because that does help when, especially trying to remember something.
Yeah.
Doing something else helps you recall what that is.
Yeah.
And this is the same, because it's like you're doing it, then maybe something you're doing all of a sudden goes, wait a minute, I wonder if I could do this too in the other. I wonder if that solves that problem.
Yeah. So it's a welcome addition. I just wish they made it a little bit more prominent when you're playing, because we didn't realize until, I don't know, 2 hours in, probably.
Yeah. There's sometimes a bit of backtracking in the game, which is always something that sometimes annoys me, especially when it's like an ordeal to get to. And we had to do this whole thing with this fruit tree, but it meant like going back to this place and then getting out of the ladder, putting the ladder back up, getting on the cloud, going to the next part, coming back, you know.
Yeah.
But and you needed like several different pieces of fruit, and it's like, oh, we have to go back to that stupid tree again.
Yeah, yeah. So, which happens. I think they could have done that better, though. But in general, they're really good at making tips and hints for you to know what to do.
Yes. Sometimes characters will say something that kind of like, this is kind of something.
Yeah. If you're stuck at one particular moment, you should be fine going to the different characters and talking to each.
Yes.
And saying, okay, what does this person have to say? So you go through all their dialogue and try to figure out if they have any hints for you. There are dialogue. I wouldn't really call them trees. It's just
options.
It doesn't matter what order you do them in or when you do them, really. It's linear, even though you have options.
Yeah, it's not like in Mass Effect where what you choose will determine what happens later in the game.
Yep.
It's just you just go through all of them until you get what you're looking for. Instead of I guess it helps break it up instead of just sitting there and listening to barf. Like, you just watch a conversation between two people forever.
I don't know. I think I would have liked it if they just made the conversations long, and I would have been fine with that. Like, because the way it is, you know, it is what it is, but I'd rather just sit there and rather than having to focus on selecting an option, just have them say it, because it doesn't matter which one you click, you know? So they could have done that a little bit different, a little bit better, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I think that's it for the gameplay. It's just.
Yeah, it's really simple. All you need is. This is compute. This is PC only right now. Is there any plans to expand it? I would say it might be a little tougher.
I believe they're moving it, if I remember correctly, they're going to do iPad and Android.
Yeah, I could see it. It looks like a game that's kind of developed for that.
Yeah. You can tell with the interface that you could use your finger to
just
do various
poke
things.
Stuff. Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's a point-and-click adventure. I mean, I think that's a good direction to move in. So.
Yeah. Kind of like how the Walking Dead games, or the other games by Telltale, they're also available on the iPad and Android devices.
Mm-hmm.
So, besides the PC. because it's just point and click.
Yep.
We got stumped on something, but I never really felt too challenged, I guess, is what I'm trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like it felt like the game might have been aimed towards maybe a younger age group or something like that.
Yeah. There are a few times where I felt accomplished for figuring out a puzzle. Like if I got stumped on something and then I solved it, it didn't feel like, oh yeah, I got that. That was hard. More of like, well, why didn't I think of that? I'm an idiot. Like, you know, it just goes along with the puzzles that are easier. So it really depends on who's playing the game. I think that's more of a personal preference. Personally, I think the gameplay of everything in the game, the gameplay was just a little too simple, and it was probably my least favorite element of the game, which sounds weird because I really did enjoy this game, but I probably would have said the same thing about all of, you know, The Walking Dead when I played that. I'd say the gameplay is the weakest aspect of The Walking Dead.
Yeah, the story in that is definitely stronger.
Yeah.
The strongest part. I guess a story in this is, I guess, one of the more interesting aspects along with the artwork. So with terms of gameplay, I'll give it like a hand wiggle. I'll just kind of, kind of going thumbs up.
I hope it's not gets more terrible. Complicated.
There's no bugs. Well, yeah. Well, not too bad. But
there's
game-breaking bugs, yes.
And I hope in the second act they evolved, because now that they've trained you how to play again, I guess.
Yeah.
I hope they do something a little bit more difficult or complicated.
Yeah, I hope maybe there's a little bit more.
Yeah. I hope Act 1 was just easy enough to get everyone into it.
Yeah.
And then Act 2 is, okay, now we're actually going to...
Now here's the real stuff. Maybe it's a little... Okay, so we've already discussed how to play this game.
Yep.
So why don't we discuss why we're playing this game? What's going on in this world? What's the story?
Well, two characters. One is kind of a sacrificial...
That was the weirdest...
Lamb? I don't know.
Yeah, that was... I'm going to stop... That it was like this all right, if you have not played this game and you don't want to know anything that happens, stop listening right now.
Yeah, we won't ruin the ending.
The game as
we won't
of...
ruin the ending to this, but we're going to explain the story kind of an overview. It won't go over every little thing, and you know, you're still going to enjoy it, but we're definitely going to lay out the groundwork for each character, which is probably the first hour of each character.
Yes,
is what we're going to go over. So you can keep listening if you don't mind. I mean, you're going to learn most of that stuff within the first hour or two of playing anyway. So
there's this, what's her name again? It's Vella.
Yep.
Vella Tartine. And it just starts off with her being like, woken up by her sister. And it's like, hey, it's time for the feast, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, yeah, I'm nervous. I can't believe I've been chosen for this. You're like, okay. So there's some kind of big event going on, and you're part of it, and you get inside, and then people start talking about, like, stuff, and it hints that your character is being sacrificed to this creature to be eaten, and you're like, what?
Yeah, your family's so proud of you.
Yeah. It's apparently a huge honor to be killed by this monster for your village.
Yep.
Because apparently if you get eaten, then the monster will go and not destroy your village, and this has been a tradition for decades.
Yeah.
For generations. I mean, there just sounds like
I don't know if it was generations, because the grandfather...
A couple generations.
Yeah. The grandfather knows enough to be like, wait, we used to fight these things.
Yeah. Her grandfather, even the town's name used to be different. They used to be like a warrior type town. It was like, we didn't have this problem. But now it's like they're a baking town, and they're just lay over and let the monster...
Hey, come on, man. It's sugar bunting.
Sugar bunting.
But yeah, it's interesting the way the family reacts to it, because it's not like they're sad or depressed their daughter's being killed. They're all like, yeah, this is a great celebration. Let's all eat cake and cupcakes.
Yeah, and the daughter too, even though she's, I don't know if I like this idea. Like, I think maybe we should fight it. It's not like she's freaking out about it.
Yeah.
I would be like, no fucking way. Running away from here.
She's like, why don't we just fight it? Wouldn't that be a good idea, everyone? We should fight it. And they're all like, no, this is just easier. It's fine.
We have another daughter.
Yeah, we have a completely another daughter. You're fine. This is a great honor. You should be happy. And the same thing is for when you're being sacrificed. There's other characters
four
being sacrificed.
Other? Yeah, you meet four other girls being sacrificed. They're all wearing outfits, and they're all trying their best to be the first one.
Yeah.
Or the next one in line to be, because it was like, oh, it's like as if trying to win a popularity contest. Like, they're all trying to be crowned the prom queen or something like that. But the problem is they're not going to be able to enjoy that because they're going to be dead.
So it's an interesting take on it. It's not dark at all. It's... You know, it's with the
it's dark in a different way.
But it's all with Tim Schafer's coding, though. It's all with a very heavy layer of humor. It's not like, you know, I never felt depressed or sad, you know, watching everyone get sacrificed. It was more like, this is ridiculous, you know? So he does it a way Tim Schafer only can do it. And I think it's a great start. start. The strengths of this game definitely are the story and the art of it. Those are fantastic, and that's the reason you should be playing this game.
Yes.
Now, if you switch over to the other storyline.
Switch over the storyline, there's a boy named Shay Volta.
Yep.
And he seems to be on a spaceship, but designed for like a six-year-old.
Yes.
He's watched over by this computer mother.
Yep.
During the day simulated day.
Yep.
And there's like this moon father who like tells him stories while he's sleeping, but you never really introduced to that. Maybe you'll find out more later in the second half.
Yep.
Because there's like some point he was like, and that's where, how you got here. Are you listening to me? And it's like, wait, I want to hear that story.
You can tell he's been on the ship for a very long time since a child. And that's why it's kind of designed around this, you know, 5 or 6 year old. Like he gets put in a fake control room. So he steers the ship, you know, he's not really steering.
Yeah. It's all like squeaky toys and stuff. Yep, they're all on the keyboard.
And he goes out on missions to save creatures. And essentially, he's just there. They're not real missions. I guess you could call them their simulated missions in a way.
Yeah. They're supposed... I mean, if they were a younger person, it would seem real to them. Like, they thought they were actually being sent on a mission. But now that he's, like, a teenager, he knows.
Yep.
He can see. He's like, I've done this, like, 100 times before.
Yep.
Every day of my entire existence.
Yep. So it kind of goes along the lines of angsty teenager with overprotective parents. Like, that's really what the core... Yeah. of his story is.
Yeah.
Whereas Vella's story is more of an adventure. Like, you're leaving your town and you're going out on an adventure. His story is more, I'm trying to escape. I'm trying to escape this daily routine of wake up, get cereal, rescue whoever from the ice cream avalanche. It's, you know, so he's trying to, it's like Groundhog Day. Like, he's trying to just break out of this cycle.
Yeah. He manages to glitch one simulation, which pretty much cancels all the programs.
Yep.
And then he gets contacted by this man wearing a wolf costume.
Yep.
Who's been hiding out in the ship this whole time.
And that's all we'll say about that. It's an interesting story. It's definitely a different take from Vella's story. And it's a good way to mix it up. The puzzles are different. Each environment is completely different. The characters are really memorable for each. I can definitely feel an attraction to all of the characters that I came across. They were all memorable.
They all had their own unique
pulse. I mean,
their own unique personality. Yeah. Personality.
They felt like real characters. Like, they didn't just feel like this two-dimensional thing.
Yeah, there was never any like throwaway NPCs kind of each person had their own role, but it was like it's definitely a sparse world when it comes to like characters. There isn't that many people,
there's probably one or two on every screen, which is enough in my opinion. It didn't feel sparse. It felt like there were plenty of characters. I would say the ship to me felt sparse because you're on a ship and there's really only four characters.
The ship's a little different because you see these guys running around all over the place in the background and stuff.
I think they had to do that to make it seem more full.
Yeah.
So his storyline, he doesn't have as many characters, but Vella's storyline is just chock full of all these people.
There's like
meet
this
over.
Grand adventure where she goes to three different towns, I guess you'd call them, who each are
unique,
also sacrificing. And...
Yeah. So her story I enjoyed more by far, which I didn't expect that. I thought I'd like the sci-fi because I'm a nerd and that's what we like.
Yeah. I feel like I definitely feel like I. Just something about space stories. I sci-fi and space, it's like I see it.
Well,
it just
it's
feels...
not my fault you have bad taste. I mean,
yeah,
it's
I'm sorry.
Just...
I did really. I like that that Loom hyperdrive thing. That was kind of that was kind of a neat idea. Yeah.
They have a whole bunch of unique takes on sci-fi.
Yeah.
So it's definitely different. But I don't know. I enjoyed Vella's story just more. I enjoyed going town to town.
She definitely feels...
You meet way more characters, and she felt way more fleshed out to me.
Yeah, I don't know if it's because we started with her or because she did more, but she almost feels like she's the main character.
Yeah.
While Shay at the moment feels like a secondary character, although things have shaken up a bit, so we'll...
I think it took a lot longer for him to break out of his story.
Yes.
Like, to get into his story took a lot longer than Vella. Vella, you're like, on this grand adventure within 15 minutes, and then with him it took us like 45 minutes before he actually started doing something that was
also felt like his story was shorter. Like, it felt like we came to the end of his story much sooner than we did hers.
Yeah.
And it might be because we were just stuck and we switched over, but it does feel like you just, we hit, there's a point where you hit the end of the story and you can't switch back to him and do any more until the next game that comes out. But,
so, I mean, that's really it for story. We don't want to give away too much. I really enjoyed the story and I want to, you know, hear more about them. I really do.
I would like to know, yeah. Especially Shay. Yeah. I want to, seems to have a bigger past than.
Yeah, going on to the future, I want to see more of Shay. I'm more interested in Shay's story than Vela's coming up. The way it left off.
Yeah, the way Vela's story seems like it ended, like her journey.
I don't know.
Kind of came to, well, I mean, like it, the way it's, I mean, it felt, there's like a conclusion that came, like she did her goal that she wanted, and, but Shay didn't.
I think it's going to be interesting because she's going to come across some characters that were, she's going to come across the other
sacrifice characters. Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah.
It's going to have, there's a lot more characters in the ship.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to Shay and how he reacts to.
To that world.
Yep. So.
But he's got the other guy.
Yep. And then trying to think. Oh, probably the next thing we want to talk about is story or art direction.
Art direction, presentation of this whole
thing. Yep.
I will give the, as kind of simple story it is, I'll give it a thumbs up.
Yeah, the story is great. Yeah. The story was strong.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. I wouldn't say it's the strongest aspect, but we'll talk about that next.
All right. So this is like the art. The presentation of this game is what we're going to talk about next. And it was pretty dang good.
Yeah, it was.
Something that you don't see usually this today. It's usually all CGI, all generated in the computer's memory and presented for you. But then this is all like a 2D layered environment, kind of almost like the old school. It's like a very retro-esque. Yep.
But they do a lot more tricks.
Yes.
Definitely. Like they do, the way they do layering, especially moving to and from the foreground, like if you're moving into or out of the screen, has a very interesting effect of things shifting out of the way and moving, and it was very fluid.
Parallaxing and whatnot.
Yeah, which was welcome. It wasn't, when you're playing this, it doesn't feel like a static 2D world whatsoever.
No, yeah, you got some depth to it, even though all the environment pieces are flat. I mean, sometimes Vera running off in the distance or something like that, just like you just notice they're just shrinking her.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, okay. I mean, that's how you would get around that kind of problem.
Like, yeah. I think the overall direction they went in, they nailed it. Like, they got the feel of what they wanted to across. Everything feels really well put together. Like, everything feels like it should be there. All the items mesh together perfectly. Even when you're going from the different worlds of each, they all still convey the same look and feel. Which is very welcome. Everything meshed together extremely well. And you can see they worked hard to try to get everything to kind of feel how it should.
Different, yeah. They, especially with, I do like the ship design.
Yep.
But Vela's, I think, was the most varied. It had different environments that you would go to.
Yeah, yeah. Right. You go to different towns. Each one has its own themes.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. Where her town, I mean, it's like a town.
It's a baker's town. Everything's made out of cake and frosting.
All the sacrifices stood on giant cakes.
Yes.
Like at first you thought they were just wearing big dresses, but then it's like as the monster eats them, you see the cake there, and like, oh, they've been sitting in a cake this whole time.
Yeah. And like the town itself, the buildings, the ground, everything looks like it's made of cake.
Cake
and frosting, so it worked out really well.
I wonder what the town used to be. It used to be called Steel Bunting.
Yes, from Steel Bunting to Sugar Bunting.
And I wonder. Actually, I'm curious what happened to cause that transition.
I don't know.
And what else is it? There's something called the Death Veil or something like that. Like they kept talking about the beginning the monster comes from.
Yep.
It's like I hope I can go past that someday, like explore that.
See what's there. Yeah, which is a lot of the reason. It's not just a story, but it's really I want to see what kind of art there is to be seen, what kind of worlds there are to be seen.
Yeah, the other, I don't know how, I think probably just because it was kind of more frustrating to get around, but the cloud world. Although I thought the concept of it was kind of interesting. There's people that live in the clouds. And they wear shoes that help make them snowshoes that help distribute their weight across these clouds. And there's like this guy running this religious cult.
Yes.
Where everybody is like the lighter you can, like it all about getting light so you can stand these clouds. And the guy is played by Jack Black.
Yeah. Yeah. So really he funny. Just has ridiculous, you can tell he's a false prophet basically, but
a beard made out of a nest.
Yeah. Yeah. With birds in it. And he drops a golden egg accidentally.
It's like, did you just lay that egg? It's like, give me that egg back.
So he's a very likable false prophet. I'd hang out with that guy.
So long as he's not trying to get you to join his cult.
No, that'd be fine. I'd enjoy hearing his points. Because you can see the logic he tries to come up with as a joke. It's completely false. Like, the way he describes things, you know, in his head, he's like, wait, that didn't make sense after he says it. So, yeah, he was a very memorable character. Yeah.
Everybody wore...
Yeah, that was like...
Very light, airy clothing.
Airy clothing, bird-themed stuff.
Yep.
And then she goes from there to a cabin in the woods.
Not that cabin in the woods, no. But a cabin. Okay,
in cabin in the woods with a paranoid lumberjack.
Yes.
It was great. He was really like hipsterish. Like he was.
Yeah, he was. But he was worried about the trees yelling at him.
But he was like, yeah, the trees were yelling. You were talking. He's like, oh, I can't take it. I can't. I'm a woodworker and I love working with wood, but when I go out there, the trees yell at me. They accuse me.
Yeah, he tries to chop down a tree and it starts screaming bloody murder. It's like, I can't do this anymore. So, yeah, I mean, it's a lumberjack who can't cut down trees.
And the trees are out to, like, get out to get. It's like, have you ever seen this guy? The one thing, though, that I don't understand, it's like snake.
Yeah.
That seemed really pointless.
It did.
There's a snake where it's like.
But I have a feeling it'll come back in act two.
It might.
It has to.
Yeah. It's like either move left or right, but if you go left, you run into a snake and you have to blow the tuba so that the snake gets off you. And like the same thing happens over and over no matter what. And it feels like there should be something that way, but at the moment it's just to block your path.
It's just in act two.
It's this game Snorlax or something.
Yes. Gotta get that flute. Doesn't like tubas, but it probably likes flutes.
Oh, snake charming.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's finally, and then she ends up in a ocean themed town where they seem to build everything out of like sand castles and stuff.
Rather than cake, it's things that stink.
Oh, it like smells like fish. Yeah, yeah. Like these girls are wearing like perfume that smells like rotten fish.
Yep, probably ambergris. I would imagine.
There's a boat filled with chum.
Yep.
And so, they too have like their own religious thing going on there.
Yep.
Which there's some things about that you'll find out later. But
yeah, it's the same in every town though. Everyone wants to be sacrificed.
Yeah, yeah. Every town, they can't wait to be killed. It's like nobody comprehends that. She says, it's like, well, if we fight them, then you don't have to be eaten. And then the girl's just like, whatever.
Yeah, what are you talking about? You don't have to be eaten. Why would we not want to be eaten?
It's like, well, if you. It's like, do you care if I just killed you right here? It's like,
yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely an interesting take. Yeah, it's not, to me, it's not morbid. It's funny. Just all the lines I have. I think they make almost all the sacrifices I want to be sacrificed because they're all airheads or like competitive and being like, I'm going to backstab this person to get murdered. It's like, okay, fine. Go ahead.
You do come across somebody in the cloud world who did not get eaten.
Oh, she was
which
quite
is curious
sad.
To me. Quite well, I wonder sad. Why that is. And she was very sad. She was very depressed that she did not get chosen.
Yep.
So to speak.
Sacrificed.
I'm trying to think of events in my head. Oh.
Oh. Oh.
I'll talk to you after.
Oh. I don't know what you're thinking. So where were we?
Shay would be that. We didn't talk too much about his. I mean, like, it is a spaceship world thing.
Yep.
It's a lot of oranges and stuff.
Yep.
Very sci-fi. I really, like we mentioned before, there's like this hyperdrive machine to like, go to different planets. It's like
I don't know why they went with yarn for a lot of things, though.
Yeah.
Because you have the thing that knits, and then you have all the little creatures. Half of them are made of yarn.
Well, I guess just...
Half of them are like honeycombs, Honeycrisp.
Yeah.
I'd eat them. They look delicious.
Yeah, this is...
Listen to them scream as I munch them down. They remind me of the little guys in Don Hertzfeld films, rejected cartoons, or rejected commercials. The little clouds that used to cheer.
Yay!
They reminded me of those the whole time. I was just like, man, one of these is going to bleed from the anus.
Yeah, they go. They all go. When he
they all dance.
It's like, oh no, save us from the train. Tell the bridge man to lower his bridge. Blow the bridge. Yay! It's like, and then like, you know, when you're trying to like disobey, no, come save us. Yay! Yeah. Just like the Kermit the Frog floppy arms.
And all the fake peril. It's like, oh, if only we had someone heroic around to save us. And they're clearly in no danger. They just want you to eat ice cream.
Just want you to say, it's like, go.
Save us from the ice cream avalanche by eating it.
He even says, yeah, you mentioned, you're like, oh, man, that's going to make him fat. And then, like, it's like, I don't think I need that much ice cream. And then the next scene, it's like, you could re-choose to do that again. And it says, like, it's like, let's get fat. Like, that was the option.
Yeah.
They were thinking the same thing as you, Kevin.
Oh, my God. Yeah, me and Tim, we're on the same wavelength.
Same wavelength.
Yeah.
You guys hang out sometimes?
Yeah, often.
Often. Yeah. Well, why is he on the show?
I've seen him every time I've gone to Seattle, which is never. So I guess I can keep saying that until I actually go to Seattle, and then I better see him, because then I have to stop saying it. So, yeah, we went off the path of our direction. We meandered. We
sidestepped. It happens sometimes.
We wandered along the path.
But it's a very bright and colorful
world. Bright and colorful.
Very, it's, you know, it's got a cartoony feel to it. Like almost like you'd see, it feels like you would see maybe an interactive children's book.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of look.
Very similar to that. It's like a storybook.
Yep, it's cool.
It's like a pop-up book. You open it up and you're like, ooh.
Live-action pop-up book. That's kind of what it is.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
I think it was conveyed well.
Kevin. My throat, like, closed up right when I was saying your name.
It's quite wet. But kind of the Kickstarter aspect of it.
Ooh.
I think this was relatively successful. I think a lot of people... I was not disappointed with the Kickstarter at all. I was for other reasons. But as far as this one goes, I was satisfied with what came about. It's about what I thought would come about of it.
Yeah.
I think it was very interesting being able to watch the progress, being very involved in it with the community.
Yeah, how did, like, you get constant updates on...
Yeah, the full, like, DVD, DVD quality, you know, documentary. Like, it's a full documentary of how they made everything and all the different art assets being made and the engine being made. It was very interesting to see how they did everything and in what steps and why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah, sometimes I run into some Kickstarters that don't tell you much and others that tell you a lot.
Yep.
So,
and for this one, the only reason I don't think I'll really be going the Kickstarter route for a lot of games is I don't think there's enough benefit for the risk involved in Kickstarter in general. It's one thing to pay for a game after it's been completed and you know exactly what you're getting for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing to essentially gamble your money saying, okay, I'm giving these developers you know, $20 or $30 in hopes that they will make a good game. But they are not obligated to make a good game.
Mm-hmm. That happens usually. I have only really like donated something to like a web series that I enjoy.
Yep.
And it's like, I wait for the first season to come out.
Yeah.
Was it good? Do I like it? Did they have a record of doing a good job? And then I was like, okay, well, I'll chip in for the next one.
And I think for a lot of these also, I'm going to tie into this also, early alpha games on Steam lately. A lot of the
That's
Steam
been really popular lately.
And it has. And I think it's a problem just in that.
It's almost like they're passing off their play testing to the public. So they don't have to hire people to do it.
I think the problem with it also is, for the people who play that early alpha, it's an alpha. And so it's not uncommon for a game to completely change direction if something's not working.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with an alpha, once you start getting even a small user base that likes the core of your game, you can't change that direction too much once you've gotten that.
Yeah.
And so if, you know, you start making a game and it works, like, it makes like a halfway decent game, you know, it's all right. It's not long by any means because you haven't fleshed everything out. But then if you start fleshing out that game and it starts becoming rotten, I guess, where you can't, you come to a stone wall and you're like, well, okay, I don't think I can work with this. I got to, you know, switch to another project or do something. Well, if you're in early alpha, you really can't do that. Like once you're locked into that early alpha phase, I mean, it's great to get all these developers up and going and making games, but I don't think it helps for the final project. You know, the final state of a game. I don't think it helps. I think it hinders it, in my opinion. It's not a good thing for, you know, people to be playing an unfinished game with only like 2 or 3 hours worth of content with promised, you know, however long it is. Like, no one knows how much content they're going to add. They could just stop, you know, whenever they kind of run out of steam or run out of ideas. And you never know when it's going to happen. So,
like,
I mean...
DayZ?
Yeah, kind of. I mean... DayZ, there's a lot of things to build on with that still. And I trust them as a developer, but with a lot of these smaller ones, I don't know if I do. I really don't think I'll be doing too many more pre-alphas for or, you know, pre-betas, whatever you want to call them, early releases, I think I'm definitely going to cut back on nearly all of them in this upcoming year. Just and I'm afraid that a lot of these games that they're doing this for, like if a lot of people cut back from these pre-alphas because of bad feedback from other ones, well, they're going to think, well, I shouldn't make this game because no one's interested in it, when really people would have loved it if it was a full game, if you kept working on it the old way. But you're going to not do it at all because you're like, well, look at all these other alphas that are doing fantastic. Why isn't mine? Well, I might as well just not do it at all. And that kind of worries me.
Let's see how it goes then.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It's definitely a big shift in the industry.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Very,
I don't know if it's good.
Democratized kind of game making.
Yep. I mean, it kind of makes you sympathize with the publisher, which is weird.
Yeah, because you're almost part of the project now. So.
But now you're a publisher with absolutely no input, and the money you're putting down on a game, you don't get those profits. Like, you're essentially gambling. That's all you're doing,
yeah.
You know? And it's not worth the risk in most cases, in my opinion. I think there's enough games out there where if you put money towards it, you may realize, okay, wait, I shouldn't have done this. Yep.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin.
You're welcome.
So in terms for Broken Age, though, how do you feel Act 1
I'd give rates? It 4 sacrificed princesses out of 5. I mean, a very good game. The game aspect of it was its weakest point, which is kind of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it was something unique, something new. I think it's a big new direction for point and clicks to move in. Because there's really not that many out there anymore. I mean, you've got the only two people I can think who do it now are Tim Schafer and
Telltale.
That's it. And, you know, I think it's good to have going back to the Tim Schafer roots of it and seeing what his take is on it after doing it or not doing it for so long.
Do you think we might see more?
I hope so.
If this does well?
I really think...
With the popularity of Telltale's games and then maybe this?
Yeah, I think... it sounds odd, but I think... The future of these games really, really, really will do well on tablets. I really think touchscreens will be fantastic for these type of games. And I think if they can market it correctly and get it on there and get them talked about and create the right game for a tablet, it will do fantastic. I really think that's the direction they need to move in.
I can say, yeah, they're also good games.
Because there's not that many...
pick up on the go, too.
Yeah, there's not many AAA games on tablets that aren't just... I guess you could call them... addiction game, you know, games that you just play for a short period of time, you know, it's great, you know, you're addicted to it, you just want to play more of it, but then like after a week you're like, well, okay, you know, I figured out all the gameplay, you know, I've unlocked enough or whatever, I don't feel any more pull towards it. I think it would be much better to have an experience of a point and click, which is perfect. It's perfect for a tablet, and it's, you know, it's a fleshed out game with a good story. I think, you know, I hope they move in that direction.
So do I.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think more.
That's
I gotta try. Season 2 of Walking Dead came out. I'd like to play that. Finish season 1, although I haven't played the one story expansion, 400 Days or something like that.
And
then I would also like to play Telltale's Fables game because I read that comic book series, a lot of it. I've missed several months so far.
Yep.
Not since college have I read it, but I would like to play their game based on that series.
Yeah, it should be known. I don't own a tablet. I just think it would work really well.
Yeah, I can see. Oh yeah.
You know, I'm not a tablet gamer. I really hope they keep everything on desktop, but I think to expand point and clicks, I think where they're going to thrive won't be on the desktop. I think it will
be
on
tablets.
I'm
going to side with you on this one, Kevin. Simple gameplay, but entertaining nonetheless and very pretty to look at. I will give it 4 Overprotect Sock Puppets out of 5.
Well, I think that's it for this week.
Well,
I think we survived.
Yeah, we've given our thoughts. Perhaps we should.
Maybe they can give theirs. Let's see what the world.
What does the world have to say? Actually, I was like, I wonder if it's on Metacritic.
Let's see if the world agrees with us.
But it sees, yeah. So currently, 81 on Metacritic. That's the Metascore. There is no user reviews yet, which is understandable because there's actually about 2 days until the game actually comes out.
Yeah, which is odd.
So I guess we'll go to more.
Read the worst one. I like reading
worst
the
one
worst
first.
One
all
right. First. No, you gotta click see all. You're missing the bottom.
See
line.
All?
Yeah,
oh, yeah. Wow, that's a lot.
It goes way lower than 7. Whoa.
We'll do
it's the
70.
Worst one. Right.
GameSpot. Broken Age's world may be fun to explore, but don't get too comfortable. Just as you fall into a steady groove with its story and puzzles, the game ends.
Thankfully, the ending provides some resolution while also leaving you excited for the second act.
Hey, Lucas, can I read the other one?
Yeah.
I want to read the good one. Can I be the good voice?
Yeah, you can be the good voice, Kevin. All right, should we go moderate? And then
keep going. Keep going up.
Go to the top?
No, we care about extremes here.
All right, good.
Moderate is just boring.
95. All right, from 95. Destructoid.
Destructoid say, I haven't felt the surge of nostalgia and excitement about a game in a long time. I truly think Broken Age will be looked at back fondly as one of the greats. That being said, the first act is only a few short hours, and the ending is a nail-biting cliffhanger with no word on how long will be for the rest of the game. The wait will be for the rest of the game. Which is true.
That's weird.
Both
95 and 70, and it's the exact same review.
Yes, it is. I assume there's more in each of these articles, but we just read the same thing twice in different wordings. But, you know, mine was more, I read it more upbeat.
25 point difference.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can tell most people like it, but they, it's weird because even the one at the bottom, it's basically saying, we liked this game, we want more, but it's average, you know.
It seems like they gave it a 70 because it was short.
Yeah, which isn't fair.
Which I think is, I don't want to get too on a tangent because it's kind of getting to an end here, but I have heard, I heard other people talk, it's like, it's not so bad if a game is short as long as it's really good.
Always keep
it
long more.
Yeah, I'd rather have a short, really good game like Portal rather than a long,
terrible
uninteresting
game
like...
That you don't even remember because it wasn't that good.
Yeah.
Like Superman 64.
Oh my gosh. Ugh, behind us.
It's behind us. And this industry as a whole.
Well, that should be fun. Well, Jellyheads.
It will be fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Last Coin of the Arcade. We have been your hosts, Lucas Lundson and
Kevin Wixwatt.
If you enjoyed this episode, I suggest you hop on over our website to find this and other podcasts.
What website is that?
PsychoJellyfish.com.
Oh, okay.
If you're a fan, you want to help spread the madness, give us a like, Facebook.com/PsychoJellyfish. And follow us on Twitter at Jellycast.
We're on Twitter now?
Yeah.
Oh.
Had it for a while.
Tweet, tweet.
You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and the podcast app Stitcher. Please rate and review. It really helps out our show. And finally, your thoughts, words, comments, or questions, or perhaps a game you want us to review. Tell us at email at psychojellyfish.com or leave it to us in the comments section on our website or on Facebook.
You can't tell us what to do, can they?
They can. Oh. If you are a backer of this game, you played it, please let us know. We'd love to hear what you think.
Well, we can't hear. They can type it. We can read what they think. Mistake at the podcast.
Mr. Literal. Keep it psycho.
Yeah, slide that up. Yeah.